My name is Mariusz Ostrowski, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the third day of the Link conference for the session on Link video, a technical deep dive. I will deliver that session together with my friend Danny.
You want to introduce yourself?
Oh, I forgot to introduce myself, of course. I said I'm Mariusz, but yeah, thank you. Thanks, a good reminder. It was a good party yesterday. So I'm Mariusz, I'm from Poland. I work for Microsoft Consulting Services, team called Center of Excellence, together with my friend Danny, and I'm a UC architect there.
Yeah, I'm Danny. I'm based out of Hong Kong, and yeah, we're part of the global team in the UC Center of Excellence. So it's good to have you guys, and hope that you learn something from this session.
Yes. So guys, before I start, well, I have to set certain expectations here regarding that session. And let's just agree that that your expectations toward that session will be the same, I hope. So what we want to provide you with is an overview of video features or that are supported of Link 2013. But then we really want to deeply dive in some of them. We'll not be going through all of them. It's impossible to do it in 1 hour. And we will dive really deeply, like a 400 level deep dive that Danny will kind of carry primarily on some of those features and tech underlying protocols and technologies that we implemented at Link 2013 in order to make these features work, simply speaking. Now, that's the agenda for the session. So we'll start kind of like really easily with the overview of features. We'll go slightly deeper kind of like in features, selected features. And then Danny will take over in technical deep dive part, which will take probably half of the session. And we'll walk you through the protocols, specifications, sniffer traces, logs, whatever you want to see in a 400 level session. Then we'll go slightly kind of like higher in level session again. So we'll kind of like, you know, go higher back to the kind of like slightly more acceptable level of content, let's put it that way. And we want to finish with a kind of giving you some tips what you should be looking at in order to provide a good, best, possibly fantastic video experience from Link. And this little thing called a geekometer will help you to understand at which level we are. The point is here we will not be going 400 level from the start because for the session at 9 a.m. on the last day of the conference, that'll be too tough, right? So this thing will help you. And I hope you are kind of like familiar with the concept of geekometer, aren't you? If you are not, then let me just quickly tell you what that is. So basically, if the geekometer says here, 100 level session, pure marketing stuff, no one cares, right? And of course, yeah, that's, but we will start from 100 actually because there are some messages that are important. Then we go like 200 level and you get it, right? Then we go 300 level and you kind of like, yes, yeah. And then we go 400, then it's kind of like going 400. And yes, you still get it, guys, because we will make it that you get it. So simply speaking, we'll just the level of the session will be like that, okay? So keep in mind when some of you might be expecting that's like it's gonna be hardcore troubleshooting from the beginning, no, there will be some marketing. And since this is about the video, we'll start with a little video. Very short one, but yeah, there is a reason for it. So let's roll the video. Oops. And again, I'm having the same problem as yesterday. Yeah. Yes. Help me with that. Sorry, we do have some technical issues sometimes. Hold on, let me do it. Just a second. Okay. There we go.
It seems like we are so close.
Wait. Right there, hold that.
Like this? I know that look. What are you thinking?
I think the answer's right in front of our face.
So like this?
Turn it to the left. No, the other left.
I like it.
Let's grab Joe and confirm the production timeline. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Dave. And Kate. Why am I not surprised?
I know. We work well together. Oftentimes, we finish
each other's sentences.
We made some changes and we want to loop you on the proof of concept.
Sure.
Here is the prototype.
Okay. Guys, that's brilliant. You've solved it. And it won't affect production at all. Has Amy approved this?
Let's find out right now.
Hi, everybody. I'm looking at the results right now. It's perfect. Bye.
Good job, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Nice work, people.
All right, guys, bye.
So guys, I started with a little kind of marketing video with a reason, because it carries certain messages that I think are important, because they are kind of like building a background for our session, really. The point about the link video is not about kind of like, let me see you, yes, that too, but let me see what you have to tell me, or what you have to show me, actually, right? Because I want to sometimes use the video for the business reasons, beyond just seeing you. Like, oh, we are working on this thing, details are important, let me see how that look, right? So, and it's not only just about the video, it's also about kind of like how video correlates with the data collaboration part of Link Stack, right? It's also important about the ability to catch on video, if necessary, someone who is not necessarily currently available locally. Basically, he is just working with his mobile device, and maybe we need his view on it, and sometimes the video is important, because maybe he will not tell us, but his face will tell us. That's why we think the video is important. And it's about confidence of using video. Remember that moment when that manager, I guess, that lady, kind of like made sure that she projects a professional look to her subordinates. That's also important for the video. It's also important for those people who are about to use video. And you know what? We kind of like, when we designed Link, we tried to make sure that the Link video, Link 2013 video, will address those, will provide the confidentiality, and but also provide the confidence, right? So, and also provide the ability to use the video anywhere. And so with that, these underlying messages will be showing up in our session today. I'll refer to them because they are important for us. And I guess, I hope, it's important for you as well. So what's new in Link 2013? We are like 200 level right now, so we are kind of like, you know, on a stepping curve. And so the thing is, the video in 2013 is really great. I'm coming, my background is from a traditional vendor of traditional video conferencing systems, if you wish. And I found the Link video to be kind of like very innovative. There are lots of things that we could talk about here. That's a kind of like very busy slide. We are not going to be picking up on all of them. But I would like to point and card a couple of things, because I'll be referring to them later on. So we included in Link 2013 lots of features, right, that make that experience, Link 2013 experience, properly catered for the users that need to use that for the business communication. Think about smart framing for a moment. One of the greatest features, I'll be discussing that in later, explaining how it works, but that little fact that you can concentrate on the person that is really important to you during the meeting, it's very important. We'll get there. The other point I'd like to make, for example, is we really made the ability to leverage the Link video anywhere, right? We introduced the Link 2013 mobile clients, slightly later after introduction to Link 2013, but they are there, and now you can leverage the very powerful capabilities of the Link 2013, also on the mobile devices, so tablets, slates, and as you heard during the keynote session, we are constantly extending the range of those devices. Now we are supporting Android tablets as well, so very wide array of devices, mobile devices, can support video these days with Link 2013. And that's important to also realize that beyond the availability of the video and the great features, there might be certain dependencies. And I'll make a point about the Link mobile client, because that's kind of important, right? So Link 2013 mobile client is leveraging the same approach to video with a H.264 SVC stack, and with the underlying technologies that Danny will talk about later. But please keep in mind that the mobile device is slightly different, and the capabilities when it comes to video on the mobile platforms can be, well, you can say limited. I would say adjusted to the devices, the capabilities of devices, and adjusted to the video experience that could be expected from such a device. What do I mean by that? Well, we have screen real estate limitations on those, right? It's not about the size of the screen, but mostly about the resolution of the screen. While this Windows phone of mine has 720p capable display, this one does not. Both are Windows phones. I wouldn't be expecting, then I cannot expect, HD stream being shown on that device, though, because simply speaking, screen cannot support it. Right? So keep in mind these little things when thinking about link video, because they do matter. We will come back to those things later during the last part of my presentation. But I would like to highlight that there are certain things that sometimes work different across platforms, and that's important to realize that mobile platforms, but not necessarily even mobile platforms, keep in mind that there might be some different things. Now, with that, we'll turn to certain features, and I will walk you through these features. Now, these features are mostly for the link-rich client, so PC client or desktop client, if you wish, because this is a primary client for Link 2013, and this is the client that we expect that the video will be utilized mostly, and it is. It's like that. So let me walk you through a couple of features, and we'll start easy, and then we're kind of like going higher and higher in terms of like complexity of the features. Oh, before I go there, I would like to emphasize that I would like not necessarily describe what the feature is, because I hope you know it, but I will mostly focus on how we implemented that and, well, why we implemented it. Because it's important sometimes to understand what was the rationale, being business rationale and technical rationale for doing certain things. This is a 400 level session, so we'll explain to you why we did certain things that way and why didn't we follow what the video conferencing legacy video conferencing environment has been doing for years, right? All right, so let's walk through them. So first feature, it's not even a feature, it's more like the ability to use Link is for the peer-to-peer video calls, right? Nothing fancy here, I guess everybody knows how it works. It's a great video experience for up to full HD, easy to start, just hit a button. Now, there are quite interesting features that we built into that peer-to-peer video experience that are worth to talk about. So first thing that I would like to talk about is the ability to stretch and shrink, if necessary, the video render window. So when I refer to video render window, I mean this window, this part of the screen, right, of the Link client, where the video is actually kind of like video stream is being pushed into, right? So when you say, what you are talking about, so stupid thing as kind of like, you know, stretching or shrinking the video window. Yes, that's important because not all the clients in this world provide this capability, and we do. Moreover, what's happening behind the scenes, and that's very important, whenever you stretch the video window, video render window, or shrink it, there is a certain things going on underneath that allow us to maintain the user experience at the best possible level at that particular for that particular video window. What's happening behind the scenes is there is certain thing called video source request that is being sent from the receiving side to the sending side. And based on that video source request, resolution of the video stream gets adjusted. Now, that means, of course, complication in terms of calculations of the bandwidth. But the point here and the assumption here, well, the assumption, design assumption here was make sure that user can always adjust the video experience to his current need. What I mean by that? Well, let me give an example. The moment I really want to know what the person thinks about what I'm saying, I'm going to go full screen video because I want to see clearly his emotions. Later, when I already understood that he really doesn't like what I'm saying, I don't care, so I'm shrinking the window. Okay? Wow, my first morning joke. It worked. Amazing. All right, guys. So now, on top of that, building on top of the peer-to-peer experience, video preview. I'm sure you all know that what we can do is like when I'm calling someone, before I place the call, or actually when I'm being, when I'm placing the call, I already can see myself like in a mirror. That's important, like in a mirror, right? Not like the camera views me, but like in a mirror. It's important because people, well, they when they raise left hand, they want to see that their left hand is raised. So like in a mirror, we are used to this kind of like, I see myself, not like the reverted image from the camera, right? And also very important, we are when you're placing the call, actually, and of course during the call as well, it's important for me to make sure that I project a professional image to the other party, but also before the call, like you've seen in that little marketing movie that we ran earlier, right? And you know, when you hover over this one, over this video button before placing the call, you can see how you would look like to the other party. That builds confidence. For users, that's important because if they are about to use the video, they need to be confident that they look good, simply speaking. We'll get back to that point later on during the deck. Now, the other important thing is also when you are kind of like receiving a call, you are in a power as a link user to make a decision whether you really want to receive the call. The first important thing as a video call, I'm sorry, as a video call. The very first important thing to note is we provide that indication whenever I have this toast showing up, like when Thomas called me, I can instantly see he is calling me on video because this little camera tells me so. So if I just click on Thomas's face, well, or on the video rather, right? So basically, I'm accepting the video stream from Thomas. But if I happen to click on options button here, right? I'm being presented as a link user, as a receiving the user that's just being called as an with options, and I can make a decision. Again, I'm in a control of my video experience to the point that I might want to say no video experience, or even no communication at all, go to voicemail. Simple thing, but think about this. How powerful user can be with these little things, right? He's not forced to go on video. He can select. That builds trust, that builds the ability for the link users to select those environments, those situations when they want to go on video. Now, I did want to go on video with Thomas, so yeah, Thomas was happy. So I was able to go on video. And still, during that video call, I'm able to see my preview. And also, I'm able at that moment stop the video if I, for a moment, during the conversation, I need to step down from the conversation and go to prepare myself a coffee. That's a very important feature for me because I work quite often from home. And you know, my coffee machine is in my kitchen. And you know, when I'm in conference call or even in peer-to-peer calls with my colleagues, sometimes I ask them for permission to step down. And that's probably the moment when I want to switch off the video. Not that I don't want them to see my empty room. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's not polite to send them the image of my empty room, right? These are the things that are very important if you want to provide the good video experience. So video preview, you could think about simple things because video conferencing vendors have been providing video preview for ages, but these capabilities of Link Client are amazing in that sense. Okay, so gallery experience. I'm not gonna really go deep into that, but the important point here is before I join the call, the conference call or video conference call, or actually gallery view meeting, as we call it in Link, I'm trying to use from time to time these terms from the video conference industry because it's kind of like more, it's easier to relate to these things for some people. Now, before I do that, right, when I join the conference call where the other people, like here my colleague Francois, he's on video already, and I'm just joining without video. You can see it by this little camera with this little kind of like red line saying, you are not on video. What can I do? I can do my video preview, make sure I'm good, and I go video. And then Francois is happy because he can see me. As you can see, he is happy because he can see my video view, right? Now, the business rationale, again, why we did it that way? Because of the confidence. Let me give you an example. If you are stepping into the meeting when there are a couple of managers, top-level managers, right, there are times that you are being dragged into such meeting, and all of a sudden you are not necessarily properly dressed for such a meeting. You don't want to be seen on video. You might make up some excuses, right? That joke didn't work. Okay, cool. Let's move on. So gallery view. Thank you. The gallery view. I guess everybody knows what it is. If you don't, there is lots of opportunity to see how that look. The point about the gallery view is we did it with a purpose. So what we did with the gallery view, why we did not implement what the video conferencing industry have been implementing for years, like a collaboration in terms of video collaboration in terms of continuous presence, whatever. First, we wanted to basically make sure that we are not going to hit the limitations that are typical limitations of the traditional MCUs in terms of performance. Our AV MCU was about to be scaled to hundreds, if not thousands, of video sessions per single entity, if you wish, right? And because of that, because we are leveraging H.264 SVC codec, we are able to achieve that because we had thrown that requirement for the CPU power on A-Link clients. You can say, yeah, well, that's cheating. It is, but then cheating with a purpose. We are not asking you for lots of bucks for these AV MCUs that we are selling to you guys, right? Which kind of makes sense, I hope. All right, so that's a technical reason. But for the gallery view and for doing it that way. But there was another reason as well, right? We do this active speaker kind of switching of the gallery view. I hope you know how it works, right? Like we have up to five people in a kind of like first row where the video can show up. Let me just go back to that thing, right? This is the kind of how it works, or rather what it is, right? And then whenever last five speakers are being shown on this active speaker kind of like list, right? Well, the reason for doing it five, there were a couple of reasons of doing it, making like five, not three or not 17. First, there is a technical reason. Simply speaking, we really need to have a real estate for that on a screen. And in order to get a proper reasonable amount of real estate for a single kind of like a view or from the single person, you need to have a kind of like limited amount of these tiles. Five turned out to be a good number for average real estate on average laptops and desktops these days. Some mobile devices might have it kind of like limited to like four, right? And there was another non-technical reason, if you say. It turns out that when you are meeting with the other participants, you can really focus on only literally up to, four or five people in a room. Like if you're in a room and there are many people, I can kind of like follow the faces of four or five people. That was also the idea behind these five. Now the question is, well, which five, right? Or which four, or which three, right? In a traditional video conferencing kind of industry, you are being kind of given with the layout and basically admin decides, or sometimes you can also ability to decide what type of layout you can have, but the point is, it's kind of hard to do it. And in Link, we talked about that and we included these features called video pinning and video spotlight. And basically they are about kind of again to give a power to the user to decide on his own video experience. Every user of Link 2013 client in a multi-view gallery experience can figure out, okay, I want to see this person, I want to see this person, and like a manager can go and say, I have to fire one of these 17 people, and I know I'm going to fire these two, so let me just pin them to the gallery before I let them know. Wow, that worked. I know that the layoff kind of joke always works. Yeah, okay, so guys, on a serious note, right, this is very important. This empowers users, not just managers, but also the subordinates, right? They want to see the manager. And also the video pinning, the video spotlight, which is also that's what about the video pinning, kind of like, I want to see this person. And the video spotlight is about more like, I am the boss. I'm running the show. You guys don't want to see me. Now, this is, again, about empowering user. But in order to achieve these two features, very much like the gallery view, we had to implement certain things in our Link 2013 client. And the things that we had to implement was the H.264 SVC and the VSRs and the quick ability to quickly and efficiently demand a video stream from other Link clients. That's what we did. There's lots of underlying technologies about that. And then I will talk about it. Okay, so last feature that I selected for the kind of like a show of these features and technologies which are behind, so you know that we are thinking about these videos seriously and we are really working on it, is smart framing. Again, I hope everybody knows what the smart framing is. Sometimes, by the way, we refer to that feature as cropping. It's the feature basically that shows up in a gallery view experience. So in a peer-to-peer, we never do smart framing. However, And this is, let me just explain a little bit. So this is what the camera sees. This is my friend Martin, who is sitting in front of the camera, right? Right now, he's sitting in front of it, and like in the middle of the viewing rectangle of the camera. Now, and then he joins the gallery view. So I guess most of you know that in a gallery view, we do not see, by definition, this rectangle view from the camera, but we see kind of like a square. How does it work? Well, basically, they are here. What's happening is the face detection. The sending client does the face detection, figures out, oh, there is a face here, happens to be Martin's face. Kind of hard to do that because he has this mustache and, whatever. But we figured out how to do it even with the mustache. And then, basically, we just select this particular square. But now, I don't have actually good screenshot of what's happened then because we forgot to take it, to be honest. But Martin has moved to this side of the room, a little bit moved his chair, and he's sitting like near to this blackboard, right? And then Martin moved to kind of like slightly close, sorry, and Martin then moved to the kind of slightly to the other side. He wanted to pick what's happening from that side, like maybe he wanted to look through the window. Now the camera sends the image, but we are sending also indication to the other receiving party that Martin is actually sitting here, right? Again, forgive me, there is no good screenshot of the camera view. And also, we do the face detection in case of like multiple faces, but in those cases, we simply decide, well, there are multiple people in the room, let's don't crop, let's just leave that. Now, what's very important about that? Why we did it? What is the business rationale and technical rationale behind this? Very simple. We really wanted to kind of help the link users to focus on what is important. And what is important during the business to means or human to human communication, I should say? The face. We want to see what the guy thinks, right? And the background is not really that important. So we remove the rest of the background because we don't care. Well, I will make a completely different point later on during my last section of this session. But for this, from the perspective of this particular feature, the background is not important. So we're kind of like getting rid of it. And the technical rationale behind it, again, was that real estate that I kind of mentioned already. We wanted to have enough real estate on the screen to fit up to 5 tiles, simply. OK, so how we do it? What's behind the scene? Really shortly, face detection, I already told you. The sending client is doing the face detection algorithm, figures out where, well, in this case, Francois is, and then sends appropriate additional message. So we are not creating a new resolution, something non-standard. No. We are just sending some additional information to the receiver, provided the receiver can consume that additional information. That additional information is carried on in RTCP stream. And that additional information is just kind of like a very lightweight indication. Here is this rectangle that you can think of. Or you should be kind of like rendering, actually, right? And the receiver is in the power to decide, do I want to show the whole screen or just this square screen, right? Because it will depend. In some cases, we might have the receivers that will not go cropping. Or the other way, like for example, if you have a Linkroom system is kind of like exception from the cropping rule, meaning assumption is you are putting the Linkroom system in a room and there'll be multiple people. So by definition, we don't want to crop because we don't want from the Linkroom system camera to kind of like just show the part of the room. We want to show all the room, so then we don't necessarily advise the receiving party to crop. There are certain situations as well when you might not want to have that cropping info at all. Meaning, basically, you are sending from your own personal camera, but the background matters. Let me give you an example. Like a president is sitting in a chair in front of the camera, running with Link, and then there are some of his advisors sitting behind the guy, right? But they're sitting kind of like far away from him because they are just advisors, and he's the president, right? So in this case, the face camera detection algorithm would pick up, and they would not be seen on video. And sometimes you want to see these advisors, meaning like there is a power behind what the president says. And yes, so that's when you might go want and disable cropping. Simply speaking, I want to send this additional information to the receiving party. Now, so I hope I was able to kind of give you some highlights that we do deploy certain kind of sophisticated things behind the video. It's not just about the encoding and decoding H.264. Now we would like to go into kind of deeper because what is the basis for it? It's actually encoding and decoding H.264, proper negotiations, and requesting video streams. And that's where Danny is going to take us.
Well, thank you. Thank you much for laying the foundation, showing all the features. So well, for those who left, the meat is right here. So maybe it's too tough in the morning. We're going to 400 level. I want to show the, some underneath technology that how to facilitate some of the features that Marish introduced, right? First of all, one big change in Link 2013 is that we introduced the H.264 SVC codec, right? We can support that. In terms of the H.264, actually, we do support AVC as well, not just SVC, because SVC is actually part of the H.264 NXG spec. So they come together. And for backward compatibility, we still support the RT video because you still need to talk to the Link 2010 guys, right? So they only talk RT video. One thing we also changed is that we deprecated the H.263 codec. So now if you are using Link 2013 client, you will not see this capability with Link 2013. H.264 is a very, very rich spec, and in there it defines a lot of profiles in there, 21 of them. And in 2013, we support two of them, which is the constraint baseline. And it is very common use for conferencing or for mobile application. And also, we support the constraint high profile. Some vendor would support like some something called progressive high profile, right? The only difference is that we in the constraint high profile, it's it doesn't have the B frame, which is quite CPU intensive to encode, right? And Microsoft is in a founding member of the USIF forum, so we are very proactive in promoting the interoperability between vendors. And so we follow the guideline that produced by USIF, and there's a UCMO0 and UCMO1, and it has a white paper that talk about fully what these modes are. And if you implement according to this white paper, then you can interop with the vendors, conforming to this. And I would go deeper into what the UCMO1 and UCMO0 is. Okay, so the codec-wise, encoding and decoding, right? I'm not going to talk about how to encode and decode. Right? It's it's well known out there. So even if your endpoint say you can encode and decode according to H.264 AVC. Do you think you can just like plug in your endpoint and interrupt? Probably not, right? Just like your IP phone. The IP phone, I can understand G711. Do you think you can use the same IP phone across different vendor? Probably not, because there's a one important aspect of it is the signaling. You need to talk, right, the same signaling first. Even the bit stream is the same. So understand that, right? So even though we say we do support this kind of code spec, it doesn't mean that you can just plug in any AVC encoder or decoder in there, okay? So why did we pick H.264 SVC? First of all, it is a standard, right? So it helps us to interrupt with others, provided that they also implement the same kind of signaling standard. And also, so Marish talked about this gallery view, right? It allows you in the conference case where you can, if you have multiple receiver, you can request for different kind of stream, and the sender can also react to it very quickly by selecting, okay, the multiple user, one asks for 1080p, one asks for 6x4, one asks for 720p, then I can quickly decide, okay, I will send the right stream for each receiver, okay? And also, they may actually have different bandwidth, which limit their frame rate, right? So I can use SVC to send, say, 720p to this user in 30 frames per second. This is just one stream. On the other hand, there's another person asking for 720p, but he can only support 15 frames. then I don't need to send another stream, say, OK, 15 frames for 720p. SVC, it's a temporal scalability, and I will talk about it, how this can be done. And also, because this is a standard codec, a lot of hardware out there, they will be able to, you know, we can do hardware acceleration so that we can offload the CPU power for some other thing and allow you to achieve HD in a lower spec of, you know, your CPU requirement, okay? So I talk about these two Mo from the you know, USIF spec, Mo 0 and Mo 1. Actually, they define to up to Mo 3, and currently, Link 2013, we only support 0 and 1 because we think this is the most common use and most effective way of implementing it to provide general request. Okay, let me tell you what Mode 0 is. Mode 0 is basically the generic like AVC support, right? In this diagram, you can see the I, meaning the iframe from the video stream. Iframe is the most important one. It gives you like the initial frame for all the back the video stream, and then every, you know, say if this is the 30 frame per second, that means every 1/30th of a second you will get an update, right? A P frame, a predicted frame to give you the delta, so that you don't need to send the whole screen again, right? And the P frame is just the delta. Okay, I move my right hand, so it will send this part of the screen. Say okay, put it there, and you get the new update. And this is the Mode 0, and any AVC encoder decoder, they will be able to understand that. Okay. Now we also support something called Mode 1. Mode 1 is actually supporting the so-called temporal scalability. Temporal means time, right? It means that if I send the same one stream out there, you can actually extract some information from there to allow you to differentiate, say, 15 frames per second and 30 frames per second, depending on which information to use. So let's explain that. The bottom one, the bottom layer is called layer 0. Look familiar, right, from the Mode 0, which is exactly from Mode 0, the iframe and P frame. And say if I'm asking for 30 frames per second, the low one, actually, the P is every 1/15th of a second, it will send this update, right? So this layer will give you information to reconstruct a 15 frame per second of a bit stream, okay? But we have an enhanced layer, layer 1. That one will also give you like the 15 frame per second. If you understand SVC, what you could do is that, okay, if I extract all the information from layer 0 and layer 1, I can reconstruct a 30 frame per second of a bit stream, right? And for some receiver, if, say, my bandwidth is limited and I only can support 15 frames per second, then the conference, like MCU, he can say, okay, the sender sent me these two layers, but this particular receiver can only do 15 frames per second because of the bandwidth. I will just send this part, the layer 0, and the receiver will construct it as a 15 frame per second. The advantage of that is that sender only send one stream, right? And then the AVMCU can just switch it, okay, give you this information or give you all the information so that the receiver can reconstruct whether it's 15 or 30 frames per second, okay? So that's a great advantage. So now you will ask, what happened if I am just an AVC, you know, aware decoder, right? I don't know SVC. What do I do? Right? So don't worry. So in this structure, I'm showing just like all the frames that, you know, sending from time, different frames. The first one, this is the iframe. This is an important one. You don't want to miss. And there's a priority ID. That's a priority ID for that particular stream. TID is a temporal ID. And zero means it's a layer zero frame. So you have this frame, layer zero frame, and here. And then every like 1/15th of a second, you get another update, right? So in this case, I send the layer one P frame. And then after layer one P frame, I send a layer zero and send a layer one. Now, if you decode all this, you get 15 frames per second for each layer, and you can construct together to get a 30 frames per second, right? Now, what if I'm just a AVC decoder? Very easy. Since you just need to ignore the priority ID and TID, just treat it as regular iframe and preframe, and decode everything together, right? You do not like strip out, okay, this is for zero and this is one. I don't care, because I don't understand this header. Decode everything, again, you will still achieve like 15 frames per second, because every layer is at 7.5 frames per second, right? Does it make sense? So this is how we use SVC to achieve some kind of scalability and also provide compatibility with the AVC decoder, okay? Now, this is a 400 level. If I just talk about this kind of slide, and you give me a bad eval, right? So I'm going to give you examples, right? And as somebody said, you know, if you want to achieve a 400 level, you need to have some trace, you need to have some PowerShell scripts, right? Yeah, so we'll do that. Three scenarios. One is a layer 2013 client calling another layer 2013 client, link 2013 client. Another one is call between 2013 and 2010. And then 2013 to a 2013 mobile client, right? To see is there any difference, because they look different, right? One is on desktop, one is on mobile. So what do we expect in the SDB exchange? I talk about, you know, the signaling, right? It's very important that you can understand each other, SDP. And then I want to talk about what happened during when Marish talked about I can resize the screen, and how does the video switching is happening, right? How does it work? So case one, in terms of signaling, this is the link 2013 calling another 2013 client. And you can see that by this user agent, it's a 2013 version number. AS, and Amy and Gareth, they are both 2013, okay? That's easy, that's from the SIP invite, right? So here, this is the SDP. This is from the 2013 SDP exchange, the final one. Highlighted in red, you can see the M line, the media description. We support 122 payload type, 121, 23. 122 is the H.264, which we prefer. 121 for backward compatibility, RT video. And 123 is this ULP FEC. It's a uneven level protection for FEC. It's only supported on link 2013. It's for the for error collection for the video, right? It's not a codec, but it's a way to protect the media bitstream. And we still advertise the RT video capability. And you can see there are some extra resolution that we put in there, right? If you compare to the original link 2010 client. And then there's the RTP map, right? Well, we support 122, like the packetization mode, the multi-session transmission mode. So this is what's in the SDP, right? Then what we are advertising. And this line I will come back later, okay? So that is the signaling difference that you will see from the SDP. And what about the 2013 calling 2010? I make another call from Gareth to Luis. And you can see that from the user agent, Luis is actually a 2010 client. And what's the difference in the RTP, in the SDP level? The top one is the SDP from the 2010. Obviously, it only understands 121, which is RT video. And it advertises its capability, what kind of resolution it supports, right? And these slides will be provided to you in after the conference. But if you want to take a picture of me, it's OK. So RT video, the bottom part, I'm also showing you the 2013 client. Because after the negotiation, they agree. The 2013 client say, OK, you only understand RT video. OK, I'll just give you my RT video capability. So then originally, it has more. And then now it negotiate down to RT video, right? So that's the SDP exchange part. Now, those are for the desktop clients. So you may ask, what if I have a mobile client, right? You know, they look very different. Do they really behave differently? This is the exchange, the invite from the between a Link 2013 desktop client and mobile. And you can see from here, it's from a server, UCWA. And we know that a mobile client is using UCWA as signaling, right? So they use that. So that's why it's coming from the server, OK, for UCWA. What about the SDP? Looks familiar, right, from the Link 2013 desktop client. We still support the same kind of payload type. We still advertise the XCAPs and the same kind of RTP map. The one thing that's a little bit different is that notice that the mobile client is advertising only, I can support up to 6x4, which makes sense, right? I don't have a mobile client that can support like 1080p. So that's the only difference, right? Because underneath the media stack is pretty much the same. So, and we support the same H.264 SVC. So you would expect similar behaviors, okay? So that's how the call would be set up, how the SDP exchange is going on. Great. And Marius is talking about we and empower the users to request for different kind of a stream, right? Different resolution. Different user can ask for frame rate resolution differently. How do we achieve that and quickly, right? We use something called VSR, Video Source Request. It is a RTCP extension, okay? The receiver will send this out, and it will ask for a media source ID, like who do I want to receive from? If you have a peer-to-peer case, the only one I want to ask is from the other side, right? But if you have conference case, then it's very important, the media source ID, right? I want to ask from speaker one, speaker two. So I want to specify that, and what kind of resolution I want, what kind of frame rate I want, and the kind of bit rate and codec. It allows the receiver to quickly ask for a different combination of resolution and frame rate when he changed the screen, right? From a default screen to full screen, right? And so that he can render it. And also when there's a bandwidth change, I can ask for a different bit rate. And it allows the sender to quickly react to that, right? Especially when you have a lot of participants in the conference. They may, the condition may change differently, right? Each one, somebody may pin another user. Then the sender would know, okay, I want to send to this receiver, 1080p, I want to send to this one, 6x4. It would be, if otherwise, well, if you have to renegotiate the SIP level, right, SDP, then it would take too long to react. By using the RTCP extension, it would be very quick. You don't need to renegotiate because the session is already going on, right? You're already connected by the session.
It doesn't happen in the SDP at all. So
the SDP exchange is only happening at the first beginning, right? So I tell you I understand H.264, okay, we can talk to you. And then the VSR will ask, okay, now I start to send, ask for this 6x4 this stream, right, 30 frames per second. Please send it to me. So it will be very, very quick, okay? Because SIP negotiation takes a long time, okay? No, it won't. And I'll show you how to see this kind of thing, right? So all this thing is defined in our protocol document, right? If any of you want to understand or you want to build a system that interact with us, actually we document all these protocols, right, in the MSDN protocol doc. And so that if you just read through it carefully, then you should be able to interrupt, right? So remember, this was like a purple line in the SDP. So that's where we advertise that we support video source requests. It's based on the RTCP feedback message, right? In there, it's like the send side, I support SRC and PRI. Receive side, I support SRC and PRI. What are they? Like video source requests, right? And PRI is picture loss indication. We're not going to talk about that here. For Link 2010, you will not see this message because it supports something else for asking for the different resolution. It's the profile-specific extension. Similarly, it's also RTCP, but not the same way. Okay? So Luis asked for, you know, if I don't see it in SDP, you know, how do I know it's actually working? Are you telling, you know, maybe you're lying to me. So 400 levels, so I will explain to it, right? And we have this, so all the RTP and RTCP by default are encrypted. So if you use NetMon Capture, hopefully you want to see RTCP, let me see what's going on. You cannot because it's encrypted. So what you need to do is you want to disable the encryption first. So go to the server, right, and you do this PowerShell command. So PowerShell command, so 350 level, right? So encryption level say do not encrypt, right? And then you can use NetMon to capture the packet and filter for the RTCP payload type for 206. It's payload specific, right? Now we go to the trace. Now it's 400 level. So I fulfilled this, you know, 400 level thing. So you see this payload specific 206, right? It's an application layer feedback, so that's a format. And all the information that you want to look for VSR is in this feedback control information. And it still looks encrypted to me. It's a piece of junk, right? So don't worry, we will decrypt it for you. So this is the exact example that I captured, and I will use the exact, you know, bits to decrypt and let you understand. And if you go to the protocol doc, you will see this kind of structure and be able to understand it as well.
So then just to clarify, this is not encrypted anymore, this blue part.
Right.
It's just the NetMon parser does not decode that, right? Right? And that's why we have Danny with his wonderful tools called Excel, and he decodes them.
Yeah, so if you think I'm lying, right? Remember this is 0001 and 9C, right? I'm actually using this data. And 01, the type, right? This is the feedback type, which is VSR 1. 9C is the length of the whole thing, the whole packet. And it's asking for media with source ID. So for simplicity, I only use a peer-to-peer example, right? So it's asking for source from any, because I only have one sender, right? But in the case of a conference, this VSR will the MCU will aggregate all the VSR requests from the receiver. And the receiver will actually ask for a specific media source ID, because I would say, I want the media source from Marish. I will put that MSID in there. And the MCU will aggregate all this and bunch it up and send it to the receiver. So, okay, somebody asked you for this, right? And request ID is the first one. Reserve doesn't care, version 0. And there's a reserve and there's a K bit in there. In this example, it's 1. K is a keyframe indicator, meaning, well, this is the first request. It's actually asking for an iframe. I want the first frame, right, important frame. In case if you actually, like, your network drop some of the packet, you're lost, right? You can actually ask for the keyframe again. Okay, give me the information again so that I can rebuild my screen, right? In this packet, I have two entries, two VSR entries. Actually, why would I have two? One is that I asked for the codec of H.264, and I asked for the RTV as a RT video, because in the SDP exchange, they say, okay, the other side support H.264 and RT video. Each entry's length, okay? So this is the header. And following the header is the individual VSR entry. So the first entry is saying that this is for payload type 122, And what is 122? H.264, right? I'm asking for H.264 stream that's UC config mode 1, right, which is SVC, and aspect ratio of like 1, which is 16 by 9. Okay. My maximum bandwidth, maximum width is 430, maximum height is 430. So for some of you who really understand all the supported resolution, there's no resolution called 430, 432, it's usually 424 or something like that. It's there because it ran up to a number that's a multiple of 16, okay? 16 by 9, right? But the sender will decide what are the supported resolution, and so it will actually send 424 by whatever. Ask for the bit rate, right? And then there are 28 bytes of some other stuff that we don't really care. But we do care about the frame rate. In this case, it's asking for, okay, I want a 15 frame per second. So this is the kind of information you will get in the RTCP level when the receiver say, I want to get this, right? And then there's another VSL entry following this for RT video, which is exactly the same, but different payload type. Now, that resolution is the default screen that I have when I start the video. Okay. Now, in my test, I enlarge it to a full screen of my screen. Then I should expect a video that fits this new resolution, right? A good screen. So I would the receiver, like my client, would ask the sender, "Hey, I have new change to my screen. Give me new resolution." So this is what happened. Forget about the header, it's similar, but in the VSR, it's asking for, okay, payload type 122, config mode 1, aspect ratio still 16 by 9. Now, what's changed is the width, I'm asking for 960. The height, I'm asking maximum, right, 960. And because of 16 by 9, you get the right resolution. And I'm asking for 2 megabit per second now. Previously, it was like 350, right? And this time I'm asking of 30 frames per second, right? So this is all done in the RTCP level very quickly. I'll send a message and the sender will quickly react to it. So that is how we achieve this quick switching between video streams and also allow the conference MCU to actually be very effective efficiently, right? I do not need to decode each stream and then send it to the user because I can aggregate all the requests from the user and the sender will send the SVC stream and all the MCU is doing is just switching. I say, okay, I'll forward this to you, I do not decode, right? So that is the VSR. Now, how does the video react when there's any kind of bandwidth change, right? Well, bandwidth never change, I guess. So when there's a bandwidth change, we use RTCP during the call for bandwidth estimation, right? We send some RTCP probe in there. So between the sender and receiver, we always understand this link, okay, what kind of a bandwidth that I'm estimating, what kind of like jitter or stuff that I'm seeing. So if the bandwidth that I find out that it dropped below a certain threshold, a minimum level, for example, for 1080, the minimum is 1.5 meg. Right? If I see that the bandwidth dropped below 1.5 meg, right, then I know maybe it's time to change the resolution. This person cannot support 1080 anymore. And who make that decision? It's the sender. The receiver, I always want 1080p, right? Send me 1080p. But the sender sees that the feedback from RTCP say, oh, this link is dropping to like 350. It can only support up to 6x4, 640 by 480. Then I will send 6x4 resolution to this user. The receiver doesn't need to do anything. You just ask for originally 1080. The screen is still maximized, right? So I receive this 6x4 will my screen suddenly shrink? No, it will just stretch to fill out the whole screen, but you have a poor resolution, a poor quality, and you know, maybe I will just minimize it a little bit. Then it will look a little bit better, even though it's seeing the same thing. So again, there's no, in this case, there's no new invite. I'm not inviting you for another one. I'm not even sending you a new VSR. Right? The receiver is not asking for something new. It's very quickly responding. There's another factor that applies to bandwidth, which is commission control, right? So what happens if, say, I have commission control on this link, and I'm applying, say, 350K BPS, and the receiver asks for, you know, the 720p. So the sender, again, he knows, right? He will ask for the bandwidth limit. They say, okay, 350, this person is asking for 720. It does not work. So, well, if it's within certain limit, right, above the minimum, I can still adjust maybe the resolution but give you a lower frame rate. But in this case, you're asking for like 720, but you can only do 350. The 350 does not meet the minimum for 720 as a 15 frame per second, right? Because like 30 frame per second will go even higher. Then I cannot satisfy any 720p kind of stream. I'll only give you what's conform to the bandwidth limit, right? It's the intelligence on the sender side. Okay, does that make sense? So with that, that's the underneath thing. And since it's early morning, so we want to give you something lighter to end this with.
Yeah. So for the rest of the session, for a couple of minutes towards the end, we would like to cover one more important thing because we talked about all these cool features of link video in 2013. We talk about the technology behind that power them, right? Like face detection in a smart cropping, like VSRs that power these quick changes in a gallery view, right? Now, you might think, oh, that's cool. The Microsoft guys done all the work. I can just fire it works. Well, guess what? There is some work you guys have to do. Well, you have to plan for the experience if you want to, for the video experience, if you want to have the kind of like a best video experience, or I sometimes to make a joke like a, if you want to have fantastic video experience, you really want to plan on it. So obviously, the very first thing that you have to take into consideration when planning for video is the hardware. Bottom line, weak hardware, weak video experience. Good hardware, good video experience. And so on, right? Now, so CPU is the one of the most important things. You really have to have a kind of like a machine that can provide a reasonable CPU horsepower or machine with a video acceleration, graphical processing units. The good news about this, guys, is like if you've been purchasing the PCs or laptops over the last 2 or 3 years, or even 4 years, you are kind of like in good position probably because 1 core is good, 2 cores probably is even better, and it's highly likely that your laptops or desktops will, and especially desktop, will have hardware acceleration. So basically, it's highly likely that this point is kind of like off the list, right? However, there might be certain things that would need to be considered like OS version. Like for example, in Windows OS 7, we do support hardware acceleration for cameras. I'm gonna discuss the cameras with hardware acceleration for a moment, but not necessarily, sorry. We do support video acceleration for encoding and decoding of video, but we do not support in Windows 7 cameras with the hardware acceleration. So the hardware acceleration has to be happening in the desktop itself. Windows 8, for example, supports cameras with the acceleration built into them, so you are relieving at all your desktop from the need for doing the encoding and decoding, if you wish. Actually, encoding, not the decoding. Anyway, so there are some things that needs to be kind of taken into account, and we have these TechNet articles here, and also Jeff Schertz, our MVP from Polycom, he is doing a really great job on explaining those things in the cases where the TechNet is not necessarily fully kind of like understandable. So this is some things that needs to be taken into consideration, so hardware, right? Now, coming to kind of like hardware from a different angle, real estate. Again, bottom line, if your laptop is not full HD capable in terms of screen resolution, And lots of laptops, especially laptops, notebooks, they will have like a screen. And again, it's not about the size of the screen. It could be either 14-inch or 17-inch. But if the resolution of the display adapter, the default resolution or maximum resolution of the display adapter of the laptop is not like a 1920 by 1080p, it's like more like a 1300 by 700, don't expect full HD experience of that laptop, because Link will never go full HD, because what would be the reason of asking full HD with the VSR? Why I cannot display it, right? That kind of makes sense, hopefully. So make sure that you kind of like choose appropriate real estate. That's what I mean by real estate, resolution of screen, for the experience that you expect. Now, that doesn't mean buy laptops with a full HD capable displays for everyone or desktop. That doesn't necessarily have to be happening. Some environments don't need it, but some environments do want to have a good experience and then, you know, think about this. Also, in some environments, you have to think about a kind of like collaborative way of working. So for these environments, when it comes to video, it's a good idea to have a multi-screen setup. So you can go the video experience here with really good quality and the collaboration like a PowerPoint sharing or desktop sharing or whatever application we are working on second screen. It's typically like engineering kind of environments, because these people want to understand them very well. Like people from US are talking to people in Eastern Europe. They really want to understand what we are talking about, right, with our bad accent. And so you want to see them. And at the same time, you want to see what they are talking about on the second screen. So think about the real estate also in that sense. Some environments might kind of, it helps with the video experience. All right, cameras. We touched upon it really shortly. Bottom line again, no camera that's capable of HD, no HD, right, from this user. Well, again, it's not an issue anymore, because modern laptops most often do have the built-in cameras that are HD capable. Or sometimes even full HD capable. But keep in mind, no full HD camera, no full HD stream, simply speaking, right? And there are those cameras that are providing the video acceleration for the video encoding. So basically, they do a little bit of encoding of H.264 in them before they send this thing over the USB cable to the laptop. So laptop gets kind of like desktop gets kind of like a pre-encoded stream. It's not full encoded, but pre-encoded stream. Helps, definitely, but not necessarily that we often have to, because today's modern laptops, they have this, quite often they have this encoding acceleration built in them. So help, but not necessarily. Important point to note that we have this page on TechNet that provides the list with the certifications for both Link and Skype clients. Meaning we are kind of like uniting requirements for them and making sure that whenever you purchase a camera, whatever display you purchase or laptop with a certain screen resolution, that will work good for you if that's according to our kind of recommendations. Now, bandwidth. Well, for the bandwidth itself, we can spend probably another session or two for that, right? There has been some sessions. There has been some talk about the network bandwidth at this conference. I strongly advise you revisit or visit Jeff Shirt's session at this conference. On the video planning for video. The symbol is network 305, and I guess he's providing that session straight after ours. So good to see that, or later go to that materials. Now, the most important point at this moment is the devil is not as big as you might think. Now, what do you mean by that? All right, so here is the thing. In our Microsoft environment, we are kind of like, we're a little focused on video. Over the last period of last year, we've seen a tremendous increase in video consumption for both peer-to-peer and conferencing. That's a bit of peer-to-peer, that's the conferencing minutes that are being leveraged or used from the Link 2013 client. Of course, Link 2013 client was a big enabler for Microsoft employees to go video, because now Microsoft employees go video not only internally, but externally with our partners, whatever. The point is, from the bandwidth perspective, it doesn't necessarily happen that Microsoft employees go full HD. Well, sometimes we don't necessarily maybe have the proper equipment. Hopefully we are, but it's like users don't necessarily want to go like full screen all the time. They need the real estate on the screen for some other stuff that they are doing, like email during the conference, right? And the point is, it's not gonna be like HD or full HD all the time. Most of the time actually won't be even like a VGA kind of scale resolution. It's gonna be like something less, right? We are satisfied. The point is, that means bandwidth is not going to kind of overload your network in terms of bandwidth requirements. That's the lesson, and that's not only Microsoft. I'm using this example from Microsoft because we can use it officially, but that's also what other customers confirm. Like, it's why I'm not seeing full HD streams flying here and there through their networks, because people consume video and link in slightly different way that we used to think about consuming video bandwidth from the video conferencing rooms, all those telepresence rooms of the world. And again, there are tools, there are information on TechNet, how to calculate that bandwidth. I'm not going to go into them. The last talking point of today from me is the culture aspect or planning on some culture aspects things. Bottom line, not everybody wants to go on video. There are cultural things that kind of prevents us from that, doing that. People might not necessarily want to go on video in certain environments. And again, don't force people to do it, right? Do not be a manager that says, this meeting is going to be on video. I want all my subordinates go on video. Guess what? Some of them might be in a hotel and not necessarily the kind of like most suitable environment for whatever reason. Yeah, you got it. Okay, so now the point is, no, that serious, on a serious note, like open space environment. You could think, what's wrong with open space environment? Why wouldn't people want to go on video in open space environment, right? Some people don't because they are afraid that they will be, I mean, someone who is walking behind them will see whom they are talking to, right? So they prefer not to go on video. Again, remember when I was talking about all these control features that we put into Link. I can do the video preview, I can pin, all this stuff. Educate your users. Educate about the control that the Link user has in terms of video, right? But educate also about the user benefits from video, right? That there's lots of benefits, so kind of like now we can understand you better, stuff like that. But again, the bottom line, do not force the video. And if you remember when I was talking about the smart framing, I said like the background does not matter that much, so we remove it. Yes, it does matter in that sense. Because if all of a sudden the background is kind of like not suitable for the video, we tend not to go on video. What do I mean by that? Well, let me give you a much personal example, which is here. So it's actually here. So when I work primarily from my home office, right? I have a shelf behind me, and that shelf has a toy from my childhood, which is a big lion, like actually lioness. And you know, whenever I go on video, my colleagues make jokes of me. I made a joke of me saying, hey, there is a lion behind us. Yeah, I know, right? but seriously speaking, on a serious note, on some people, if they are not comfortable with background, they might not go on video. So remove those obstacles. Now, moving from that funny example to like a business environment, there might be things like open space or whatever. Build booths, video booths if necessary, right? Like quite often you have these quiet rooms, right? Educate user. You want to go on video? Go to this room. Just make sure that the room is suitable. It's not like a small booth with the kind of like, it should be kind of, or go LRS or go round table, right? Give them the options so they kind of start liking going on video. The background does matter, right? So, okay, so with that, I would like to kind of wrap up. And we have lots of additional information for you that you can find in other sessions during the Link conference. Pardon? Yes. So actually, what we would like to do right now is to stop at that. You'll find in the deck plenty of other links and references and material. Obviously, you will get this deck as well in a couple of days after the Link conference. And here, at this moment, we would like to stop and just open for any Q&A or any questions that you might have. And for those of you who might have any questions, we would like to ask you to come to the mic. To encourage you to come to the mic, then it has these wonderful giveaways for you.
Yeah. Only for good questions.
Yes. Please.
Hi, any plans for 4K support anytime soon?
Yeah, 4K support, there's no defined roadmap for that yet. Nothing I can disclose.
But we are definitely looking at
but
it.
What's the reality out there, right? I mean, how many people have the encoder for 4K and decoder for 4K? It's not in mainstream yet. So
we definitely realize the importance of 4K for certain verticals, like healthcare vertical or manufacturing, and we are looking into it
that
way.
Right, exactly. Yes.
So do you ever do negotiation with the sender? Like, let's say I'm broadcasting in full high definition.
Yeah.
But nobody on the other end is receiving in high definition.
Right.
Do you renegotiate with me to reduce my bandwidth?
Okay. So first of all, we do not do broadcast, right? It's all request, right? VSR is like a video source request. If somebody asks me to send this stream, I will send this stream. And say, for example, now we are talking in the conference, you ask for 1080p, and then suddenly you say, okay, I don't need that, or I drop out of the active speaker or something like that, right? Then I actually will stop sending. If there's nobody listening to, receiving this, I will stop. If somebody say he turned it from 1080p to 6x4, then no more 1080p is encoded and sent.
Okay, so I'm saving bandwidth on the
that's
sending.
Correct. That's correct. Okay. Only it's needed, yes.
Okay, that's cool.
Thank you. That's a good question. Very quick one. Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, so there is a session about video integration with Skype, and it will be released soon, right, this year?
Was there an announcement there?
There's a peer-to-peer video interrupt with Ling and Skype. It is announced, actually, right?
Well, deep dive on the demo from front of room.
Yeah, so yeah. That was the... MIT 400 session. That's the code symbol. If you go to later on to materials, that's where you can figure out more about that video interrupt.
Yeah. And at this point, it's a peer-to-peer is planned, and then we're working on the enabling the end conference as well. Okay.
Right. Guys, since we are a little bit over time, we are happy to stay in the room and keep more questions. But for those of you who want to leave, thank you very much.
Well,
for
before
your
you leave, time. Please, we highly evaluate the evals.
Yes.
Please send in the eval, good or bad. You know, we
that's
like
here,
it.
Guys, this little checkbox, that's eval. Go onto my link on your mobile device or mylink, linkconf.com, and just do the eval. That's and send any comments. They are really important to us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, and we will take the rest of the questions offline.
Yeah, we'll be here if you have questions.